Get Me I Idaho, where every meal is a banquet.
Yes, sir.
Where your instincts will serve you better than your government.
Yes, sir.
I can't hear you.
Yes, sir.
TheMicroEffectLive.com. The Micro Effect, a worldwide broadcast on the internet and on KU band satellite. Telstar 5, Transponder 5, TheMicroEffectLive.com. Don't miss it.
Yes, sir.
Folks, welcome back to the Story Behind the Story. I'm your host for the next few days here, Clint Richardson, and with me today is Hal Anthony. Again, one of my favorite souls on this earth, and very pleased to have him here today. Before we get back into the mining law, I'm going to do my best to fill in for Dr. A. Truott and try to fill his shoes. It's time for everyone's favorite game show, America in Jeopardy. Let's hear today's Jeopardy answer. This international program has now been implemented in over 130 countries around the world. It was created by the League of Nations, which is now called the United Nations, wholly 8 years before it was voted on and implemented in the United States in 1935 as a federal program. And is now coordinated worldwide through the World Bank and what it calls its Human Development Network. The United States has bilateral international treaty agreements with over 24 countries for this social program, officially called totalization agreements. And some say that this international program represents the number of the mark of the beast. Hal, do you know the question? What is the ISSA, the International Social Security Association? Yes, folks, Social Security is in over 130 countries, being organized and run through the United Nations by the World Bank. So there you go. And yes, the United States is in treaties across the world with other countries, with its Social Security, to ensure that your taxes are collected for this socialist social program. So, welcome to the international body called the United States.
Right, and I wanted to remind people to make sure they get to your blog site and read that article that you did there.
Ah, yes, if you'd like to know more about that, that's actually kind of where I got it from. my blog is reality. Blogger with one G .wordpress.com, and I just wrote a quite lengthy explanation of section 666 about the Social Security system. Very interesting read, and it is called Social Security, the International Mark of the Beast. So enjoy that. All right, Hal. Now let's talk about what does it take at this point to actually do what you've done and to become a miner? How difficult is it to actually get into this?
Well, it's not. There's a couple of stages of mining within the mining law, and you got to go out looking for it. It's called a prospector. And you know that how fast that happens, and you become a miner, if you will. A miner has a technical word, a name, but for the street language, you know, it's just people that go bust rocks up and try to find precious metals, as we might know, and so we can use the street language. But there's something before miner. You got to find it. That's called prospect. And by the way, the grant, the mining law of 1866 is written, a free and open access to the unappropriated public lands. Now we're back to the beginning of what you started. what Congress is holding in trust to dispose. They dispose the certain of the mineral estate, the value, it ends up being by an 1872 defined as valuable mineral deposits. You have to go prospect for those, and you have underneath this act and grant free and open access to go explore for them. So you become, essentially, you become a miner with certain rights as soon as you intend in good faith to go look for a valuable mineral deposit. It's, it can happen right there where you sit drinking your mint julep or looking at your favorite Jeopardy. And by the way, I used to do that podcast, that show real good until I realized that, why do I know all this stuff? I hate the song now. But and I wondered, I realized then it was just all to entertain us so that we would stay away from doing what we need to do. But prospecting happens right when you intend under the mining law. And right from that point, you have certain rights that attach to you.
There's markers involved. There's a lawful, correct way to mark the territory. And what's the acreage that you can actually mark?
Sure. It's all dictated by the valuable mineral deposit. I'm strictly now talking only to all the mining acts culminating in the Act of 1872 that you hear. There was, just to let people know, there was a couple of other mining laws that passed, like the mineral leasing laws and the Act of the Common Mineral Materials in 1947 and the amendment to that in 55. And those were common minerals that weren't even actually accessible up until 1947. At that time. But we're talking only about things that are valuable. People understand them mostly like with gold and silver and copper and things like that, but they extend to even silica, a high-grade medical silica. And so the point, you're out and about in the unappropriated public lands, and you've done your research to make sure of where the claims are. You go to the Bureau of Land Management, and they'll and you read their records, and they'll explain who's got a claim running. Then you run down to the county, and you go read the records there to see who in the area that you think you're going to be prospecting, who has claims, so that you don't trespass on that miner's property. So the miner also has to mark his claim conspicuously. But as the new prospector, you say, I'm going to go get some gold. You go down and you research where you can to find out who has claims, and you go out into unappropriated lands and you're looking around, and let's say you have a place that you think is gold and you find out that there's nobody there. There's no markings. There's no conspicuous things. Well, you have to place up your own. And if you are searching for a discovery, then you are called having a petis possessio claim. And typically you're smart to go ahead and lay out that area. You're laying out an area you're going to prospect. And you make markers, and they have to be conspicuous. They can be a pile of rock. California, they make it a piece of PVC tube that's so big around and so tall. And you lay out your claim. That's your boundary. Now, once you make a discovery, that you can make it permanent by formalizing it with a notice to the county that you now claim and give notice to the BLM. And so you find it. You go to a place. Let's say you find a place that doesn't have any markings on it on the ground, so there's no prior entrymen. And you then lay out. You look at the ground. You do your assaying. You do your prospecting, and you kind of lay out where you think the deposit lays. And we're talking placer in my mind right now. Otherwise, you got a hard rock vein that you've been digging into the rock and going after yourself for whatever time you find that it's a discovery. You to make the decision that you would work, that a reasonable and prudent man would work that claim as a livelihood. Once you find that, you have a discovery. Then you go out and you delineate where that area is that you're going to claim. That's done by monument. And that's required so that you segregate that land away from the public land. It now becomes public domain. The management, you were reading Title 43, that's the public Land Management Policy Act. That is under public land management. The agencies have no actual authority over granted mineral deposits on public domain. A public domain is what dedicated specific use land is, and it's the highways too. The highways, once they're dedicated, they become public domain, and they're outside of the management authority. So the miner goes in, the prospector, he goes and he says, oh, here's my valuable mineral deposit, and he stakes a claim by putting monuments to delineate where the boundary is. Then he files a piece of paper with the local county and says, that's my claim. And that's pretty much what all you got. There's a certain requirements, a certain little requirements here, nuts and bolts. That's essentially all you have to do.
All right, so let's say that that someone did this. What are the fees, first of all, for doing this? It seems to me like there shouldn't be any, at least lawfully. And then what about taxes? Do you have property type taxes? Do you have land taxes, land use taxes, or can you actually fight those?
Well, no. You bring up again, as we talk, we always talk on subjects that always have a multiple paths of answers depending on what you want to do. If you just want to be a complacent type of not non-challenging anything, well, you're going to pay the money to the BLM to file the claim. You're going to pay the filing fees to the county clerk for the filing fees of your forms. You're also going to over time pay for improvements on that claim, which are required to be done by the grant. You can pay taxes for the improvements. So there's money that you could pay, but I think you hit it on the head. When you look at the FLTMA, which is the Title 43 sections that you are the Title 43 of the federal code, you find out that that's the federal land. Well, your mining claim is not federal land.
Hmm.
It's not a federal mining claim. It's private property, and all states will recognize it as real estate, private to the party who located it. It's once you locate it, it segregates, it splits it away, it literally carves it away. It's an inholding, a private inholding in that public land. It's and by the mining law, the claimant and the miner becomes a possessor of the title to that land, and that includes the entire surface within the limits of the claim. And this is the adulteration that the agencies are putting on. They're claiming by the 1955 Act, which never amended the mining law at all, that it somehow controls the surface because to let the agencies in on there. But the actual authority is only to monitor for fraud, because the grant, if you're doing good faith, you're presumed innocent, so that you're presumed to be doing right, and they don't have probable cause to believe that you're committing fraud. So that's their only legitimate authority, and their duty is to keep the muniments of title, which is the paperwork documents that keep track of who has these lands, because miner has these lands that he claims permanently unless he doesn't comply with the grant. And so that's really you focused on when you said that these fees might be extra. Well, you're right, because under the grant, if we were to look lawfully at, and if the miners knew what the heck was going on and they'd start to force this issue, and they would probably find out the fees that the BLM charges for public land maintenance rental is illegal as applied to the granted property, which really only requires the work in development, which constitutes improvements and other things.
Well, I mean, what we're really talking about is the ultimate definition of being a responsible people, which is and even of the Homestead Act, where land, you get these land grants and you work the land. So the concept here is not that you're going to go and grab 40 acres and have parties all day and have, you know, find a hot spring and invite people over and drink beer in the hot spring. The concept here is that you're being responsible with the land, you're improving land, you're mining or using the land for the benefit of all involved, including yourself, and you're responsible. The key word being responsible. By the way, for folks that are listening, if you want to call in, if you have any questions, we're going to take calls in the last half hour. So if you want to call in and queue, you're certainly welcome to do that. My question is, I have two questions. I'll start with this one. What happens since this now becomes – now you say it goes from being federal land to private property. Is it state land?
No, it's within a state, but it's private. This is private property. This is again, it's a possessory title prior to patent. And then the Congress has done something funky in the middle. They've not appropriated monies to take the application for patent, so they've actually dishonored their own grant. And this is another thing that needs to be argued. But getting back, these are private properties. In fact, the miner has a right of eject against anybody who invades that land, even the government itself, if it doesn't have a court order. Now, you're not going to hear this from the agencies, but I'm telling you, you need to go read anybody who's thinking about this and wanting to look at it or has a question. They just need to go read the black and white, as I tell everybody to read for themselves, and forget the agency's discussion. And if you want any proof about the veracity of the reliance about, all you got to do to go to the government website, look at their disclaimer, and especially the Forest Service, they'll tell you that none of the product they give you, their answers, are going to be guaranteed not to infringe on private property. And so there you have it. I mean, you got to be able to know your own rights, and you can't take it from anybody. And then it becomes, how do you apply the law, and how do you protect yourself? And the property right is in the miner, in the locator, including that includes the entire surface within the limits of the claim for granted mineral entrymen.
All right, so I have this little fantasy going on in my mind that you're probably going to crush. But when you build, let's say you're out there mining, you're basically doing it as your livelihood, and you know, kind of like the title of your show and your life behind the woodshed. What is the rules if it's private property? The first time I've ever even heard of the concept of real private property. It's not in the hands of the state as fake private property. What happens when you build a structure on that land? Is there still permits and limits and all that?
Well, they would claim that there is, and there's also an improvements thing where they can tax, but this is, again, we get to the paths. Do you want to fight for your right to have independent soil, or do you want to go ahead and accept the servitudes? Or do you have the discussion in you to be able to present the fact of the lack of authority and jurisdiction over certain lands? If we just go to what normally happens, if you build a structure and improvement, the county can tax it. You know, again, this is they can't tax the land itself because that's still held by the paramount title holder. The source of the title in the United States in trust for you, the miner. This is the thing that gets us beyond a fallacy about the agencies. The government holds paramount title, but it's only the source of the title. The government's source of the title is being held in trust for the miner, not the agency. So the whole thing was, the whole issue about the mining law was to settle the land. They wanted to get the miner, because see, we talked about the prospecting aspect. What happens if you don't give miners the land, and they found this out when they did leases and stuff like that, is that the miners would just simply high-grade the land. They would just find, like, you see Sutter's Mill, they'd go and they'd rip all the gold out of where they could find and tear everything up, and then they'd leave. They wouldn't engage the mineral estate the way it needs to be developed in order to provide the minerals that a modernized, you know, a technically advanced society needs. And so they gave the land so the miner would settle down and put the investment in order, because the government didn't want to do it. It's too expensive and it's too risky. It's only people like us that are kind of half crazy to think we could do something like that, like a little treasure chest out there, and they're going to cause us to go spend it, spend the money to do it. But no one wants to stick around and put a lot of money in something that's not there. So the pride of ownership, I guess, and they wanted to settle that land down so that they could get the mineral out. The whole object is to get. So. There isn't really the concept of irresponsibility at that point. That's the duty of the BLM. If they find that you're not doing something within the context of the express requirements of the mining law, you're a fraud. You're a trespasser on that end, and they'll take you out. They'll boot you. Well, they'll take you out now, but they'll get rid of you. They'll eject you off land. In fact, miners that attempted to do things were legitimate miners, actually doing legitimate mining, who did things outside of the mining law. Those parts that they did, in one case is the Rizzinelli case, for those of you that like to look things up, Rizzinelli case, they found out, I think the guy put a bar, the miner put a bar and a brothel on the mining claim, and they said, and the court came in and said, no, your mining claim's fine, but your brothel and your bar is a bit of a trespass, so you're a trespasser there, so we have to tell you to get rid of it. And the BLM was required, has the duty to find those things out, so... there's not any responsibility. You're either in the mining law grant and doing it that way, or you're simply a trespasser to it.
Well, I think it's important to know, you know, correct me if I'm mistaken here, but the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, a federal office, is strictly there as caretaker of the land that it claims in its management until someone makes a claim. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, you hear it in the name. It's a public land management. They're the delegee of the Secretary of Interior to do the management, the groundskeeping, or the uses. They call them multiple use now, and they try to impose the Multiple Use Act all over the mining law and highways, but they really can't. fact, this becomes a major victory for us at the Forest Service here just this last week, where they're attempting to control those highways that were granted dedicated public domain, and they're trying to bring them in and close them as if they're amenable to administrative rule, but they're not. So they're granted outside the holding of the government, even within the context of its disposal authority, because they're just disposed. So the agencies do have an important function, an absolutely important function, but it's not over lands that are no longer within the actual holding of the government.
Listening to you talk about this, it kind of hits me how extremely important this information is. How what a shame it is that it's out of public perception, and just how incredibly it almost. I mean, am I right that this is really the last vestige of true private property? Of true responsibility for the land by the people, of true homesteading? I mean, is this the last thing, and it's about to disappear if we don't start paying attention?
Maybe it sounds dramatic, but I absolutely have said this myself many, many years ago after I saw, I could see, you know, because I already knew about the global governance condition and how they've encroached and usurped our national sovereignty in lots of ways, not just the financial construct, although ultimately that's it. I have to agree, this is the last view we're going to have, the last example, the last foundational place that we have an example to move from. And it won't be just the miners, because once you see what this mining law did, once you see what it talks to, and that anybody who can become the assignee or the heir to the patent of the conveyance, they can step into this power themselves. So this could have a major ripple effect once people understand really kind of what I'm talking about and exposing when they see it themselves. But yes, this is the my thought is, if it hadn't been for, I kind of feel almost an embarrassment a little bit to even say it this way, but there was no miners helping themselves. The miners have done it to themselves by not being vigilant on these rights. So they've been pretty much absorbed and subsumed in their authority. I happen to be asked by someone who's a friend of mine who knows that I do what you do. We do the analysis of black and white, and we hold everyone's feet to the fire where they belong. And within the context of the law, I realized, and you know this, there anybody who wants to oppress another people who has to do it by in a so-called lawful manner has to wait for one generation to forget something. This case, we are at the last bit. Right at the last bit of anybody understanding and remembering what the mining law was, and I just happened to step in at the right moment to remind some people. I don't know if I've reminded enough people. Secondly, I don't know if enough people are going to do anything with that, but we're in the last generation of the memory of what the mining law actually is, at least by what I'm exposing and trying to get out to people.
Well, again, and this kind of brings me back to my little fantasy I got going in my mind. I mean, if 1 million people got together, even 1,000 or 100 people got together and said, look, there's this land here. There's miles and miles of BLM land out in the middle of nowhere. What do people use? Most people know BLM land is somewhere where you can go camp. There might be a lake. A reservoir there that you can camp by, and it's free camping. Ooh, what a wonderful service the government provides by allowing us to camp for so cheap, for free. And meanwhile, this is land that's being held for the people to claim, and we go and we set up our tents. So my little mind is going 100 miles a minute, thinking, what if 100 people, 1,000, even 10 people got together and said, let's get a claim. I'm going to claim this part. You claim right next to me. You claim right next to us, and so on and so forth. You've started a virtual city, a free, independent, private property city. I mean, am I wrong here, or am I being too idealistic?
Yeah, you're being a little idealistic, but although you're right, but I mean, you're idealistic in the reality. You've got this oppressor called the federal government that doesn't understand these bounds, doesn't understand the law. It doesn't understand that it doesn't have authority on certain things. And don't disregard that you need to find a land that has valuable mineral. And essentially what you've discussed is essentially a mining camp of old, and from which, and we can get into this other more important, very important discussion. It'll kick us back to section 6, 17, 12, that mining districts were formed. These were districts of governments of miners coming together to protect themselves or make rules for each other so they wouldn't kill each other, actually. This is really forms the basis of what the mining law comes from. The Congress acknowledges the governmental capacity of miners in the mining law, and it gives a special recognition to those rules and regulations. And this is what causes us to create the new mining district, Jefferson Mining District, for those that want to go look up at jeffersonminingdistrict.com. Ton of information. That's almost solely data if you're looking to understand this. And but this is a – you're looking at the mining districts were governments when miners were considered outlaws to the government. You have to understand where the miner usually always comes from. You have to understand the special place the miner has always had in history. Although vilified, the miner really established as the agent of establishing the ability of a nation to be what it is, essentially the society that it could be. Again, not to disregard the importance of food and the farmer. To me, as a miner, I'm saying, well, the food is more important than the mining at some level, but where does the miner get his plow? So it's a hand-in-hand thing. Yeah, and now in the modern age, yeah, we got fuel. But the point here is that mining districts become very prominent. And I, again, doing the research around what I do, I was advocating mining districts. The problem in the analysis was that mining districts, the power of that government, you have to understand this in the context of 43 U.S.C. 1712, that the mining district was an independent government of miners that's recognized by Congress. They're come by federal recognition. They are not a legal entity in the state that is a taxing authority that. However, they are viewed as a government because they were. They were actually long before. And this is what becomes powerful through 1712, where the law by the agencies are mandated to use what's called coordination. And this coordination requires every agency can't just steamroll everything like they have, that this every agency has to do something called coordinate. Mm-hmm. What this means is they have to bring their plans, projects, demonstrations, or other actions consistent with the law and the needs of the local people. And when people started to understand the power of this thing, and in particular for us as miners, you're talking about getting millions. Just a handful would help. Yeah, 100, yeah. 100, well, 100 people in Baker County just shut down. This wasn't just miners. The miners had a pivotal role in the background of giving information, but only 100 people were able to shut down a travel management plan and open the roads back up.
Brilliant. We're talking about outlaws, and we're going to discuss a little etymology when we get back. The word outlaw and what it really actually means. And again, if you want to comment, break, please do so. We'll be back. Yep.
I don't need to tell you that the world is headed down the wrong path. A path to serfdom and slavery. But I doubt that you fully understand how bad it might get for you. Our once wonderful government has been hijacked by gutless globalists that are committed to a world government where everything is under their control. Every person will be cataloged, tracked, stamped, and microchipped. And they fully expect most to go quietly into this slaughterhouse like a mindless cow. They have captured all the key positions of power and control, most of what people think and do. The Walking Dead. We will have a revolution at some point. Even they know this. but only those of us that are fully prepared to protect and feed ourselves and our families long term will ever see the end of this evil time. Right now, most every bite of food you take is vile, manipulated, crossbred, inbred, unnatural, and lacks any nutrition. The answer is to start growing your own healthy heirloom vegetable garden. I built the first bulk heirloom seed company exclusively for patriots like you. Now a lot of copycats have followed me, pretenders and slick marketing companies, but nobody on earth can match my offer to you. 50 varieties of heirloom vegetables, over 10,000 nutritious seeds that will produce an unlimited supply of food for you and your family. Plant some now, keep the rest in my time capsule for the days of great trouble. I'm Big John Lipscomb, and my solution to overcoming the New World Order is survivalistseeds.com. It's food insurance against tyranny. I ain't giving up. I hope you don't either.
I'm just filling in for Dr. Truott. He will be back on Wednesday. Next Wednesday, I should say. Got some interesting guests the rest of the week, and next Monday and Tuesday, please tune in. Tomorrow we're going to be joined by Breiser from TNS Radio in Ireland, as well as a couple of special sort of pop-in guests. Well, at least I hope so. So please do tune in, get a little international perspective on what's going on. You're going to find that what's happening there is happening here, and what's happening here is also happening there, unfortunately. After all, we're all basically colonies of the crown, so it doesn't surprise me that it's very similar happenings. Well, Hal, we've covered a lot of information. Now, before we get to calls, is there anything else pertinent to this discussion that you want to add?
Well, I know, and yeah, I would like to maybe touch back on the outlaws. The outlaw meant you were outside law, or outlaw outside the protection of whoever the force, the imposing force was. I just want to point out to you, this is a glimpse of what real independence does, and that the miners, though they may be cast in the historic sense of being pretty ruthless and rowdy, when they were considered outlaws. And this is an example for us today. They created governments for themselves, so that they themselves weren't, if you will, the heathen. They actually just were looked on as outlaws by an outside force. And what changed eventually, and why the mining law comes about, is because at some point we did have judges that did law, and the judges said at the time, about 1864, in one court case, and then a couple of court cases that followed, said that even though right now the miner is the outlaw, because the United States, having the duty to dispose, has forbear to allow the miner to be in the land, it implies a title. And the miner, the outlaw, with his government, was given title to the lands of their claims, and then that expression came in 1866, the actual possessory title was recognized 1 year later in 1865, so the title preceded the grant, which is fascinating. This is a very fascinating subject at one level, but I just wanted people to understand there's a whole other way to look at this world right now. There's a whole other thing we can grow into, and I think, again, the miner the example and historic evidence of what the miner shows us in the past, we can move right to the future. And if we learn how to impart it correctly, even within the construct of the occupying force, we have very formidable tools to bring to bear. And one of them is, as we were doing, we've developed the mining district in order to implement this coordination. And folks across this nation, I think you all need to start looking at it. And you'll find out that these environmental laws aren't the beast that they've been. And in fact, when you bring the environmental laws to bear through coordination, that the human, they call the human environment. I don't like the term, but that's what they use. The human environment cannot be beat down by the environment, by the bugs and bunnies, essentially.
Well, I find it interesting the, now when you say the word outlaw, basically, anybody that was ever free in this country was called an outlaw. The cowboys were essentially free men that were kind of outside the law, and a lot of them were stealing horses and were looked down upon, but they were free.
Western justice behind that was what though? It was you didn't do another horse theft, right?
And exactly.
And it seemed to be everybody had a six shooter on their hip, and it was a pretty respectable place for his in one regard.
But the entertainment industry, the movies have created a whole persona for this word outlaw, and what we're as you pointed out, we're talking about being outside of law, which in this case, when we say law, we don't really mean law. We mean legal code. So if I'm a government, back in, the 1800s, and I'm looking to get my hands on the entirety of the territories in America, North America, then I'm going to consider everybody outside of my jurisdiction, outside of the states I've created, as outlaws. I mean, any people, any Indians, anybody that lives on that land is an outlaw until they're within my jurisdiction. Likewise, we now have a situation where the United Nations considers everybody that's not within Agenda 21 Sustainable Development as outlaws until we're all globally ruled by this United Nations agenda, then we're all outlaws until we're all treated with this thing. And I mean, that's the reality of the situation, isn't it?
Well, let's put it right back. We see it in some of the movies. They explain it. If you're not underneath the king, you're an outlaw. If you're a king contrary to the king, you became outlaw in the sense that everybody would treat you and shun you. And if they didn't, then they suffered the same consequences that you were going to suffer. So there was this, again, a threat and extortion. But let's bring it right back to what we were talking about right in the beginning, where the freed black man was a black woman was then free of that system. They were outlawed. They weren't given the protection of the existing system. And so, in fact, that's when they were outlawed also, and then they were absorbed by the law to give them, to, if you will, the civil rights of equal enjoyment with the slavery of the white citizens. So
They obtained the right to vote, just like we all, the white people, did to vote for their middle management, their slave masters.
Slave masters. That's right. And so what? And you say, remember now, voting is just a franchise. And I've done these discussions on my broadcast, but people need to understand, really put the words on the table and really look at what we're doing here to ourselves. They're letting us do this to ourselves. Mm. They've constructed a whole facade around things that just doesn't exist the way that we've been told. And like you say, you're just stunned when you see this stuff printed, like you did when you did your lethal injection broadcast, and I exposed to you late in that production about the fact that the code defines us as animals,
and we're
treated no different than as animals.
You can find that in U.S. Code several places.
Absolutely, it's consistent. This is not something that's just a weird idea. The problem is it's like that red Ford pickup that you never knew existed. As soon as you buy one, you see it all around you. As soon as you see this stuff one time in one spot, all of a sudden the rest of them start making themselves apparent.
Oh, of course, and then of course they're all the codes are all amended by other codes and acts and treaties and laws, and yeah, it's just crazy. Listen, we have some callers. Let's see, Tuck in Texas, are you there? Tuck. Well, I thought we had some callers. Perhaps we don't.
Yeah, here, I'm here.
Oh, okay, great, here. Great.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, yes, I am. I inherited non-participating mineral rights, and that means my great-grandfather had the land and sold it, but he kept mineral rights that I get a percent of. The guy on the surface land gets over half of them, but I get some of them, being a descendant. And then the way the federal law comes in there is they divide the land up, and this drilling company drills here, and that drilling company drills there. And that makes sense because you don't want two oil wells 5 feet apart owned by two different companies. Two wellheads dug in the hole in the ground, whatever. And that makes sense. But what they're doing is, like, they're under the table negotiating, which I was told is legal, not illegal. And they'll tell me, well, they'll drill them the chunk of land I've got versus somewhere else if I will promise to give them part of the money I get from the monthly check, which would be in the tens of thousands of dollars every month for 20 years. And so that's what these thugs are doing in the oil companies. They own the drilling companies. And then they'll negotiate, and so you will get just a fraction of what you think you're going to get. And, cause they want you to give them part of the money you're going to get forever. Which I was told is legal. I have no way of knowing. And I've talked to probably 20 lawyers, and they don't want to get involved. So apparently it is illegal, but lawyers are not going to take on the insurance company any more than a lawyer's going to take on it here in Houston, so corrupt. They don't want to take argue with any judge. That's what they took a fear to my face. They said, well, their welfare as a lawyer depends on getting along with judges. So they're never going to win a case. And so that's how phony the system is. And I went to the Corps of Engineers out of curiosity, and some of this land is now under a lake. They built a lake on the land. That's why the land was taken in eminent domain. And the Corps of Engineers informed me, well, any of the land is out in the lake. We're not talking about the ocean, the lake. They say, any of the land out there, screw me, you can't drill out there. And that's a bald-faced lie. The county clerk, people live in the county, people have well, oil and gas wells. They have, it's no big deal to have a well in a lake. Nothing. And the Corps of Engineers, they were at the point of violence and talking to me about that. I mean, they were like, they were going to cut my throat if I don't quit bugging them about it. But they don't have any control over it. I mean, they said, well, you can't drill in the dam. Well, of course not. You can't drill the dam is. In fact, that's even like you can do a slant well drilling. That's legal. Or sideways drilling, horizontal drilling. But, the Corps of Engineers, man, these people are like Nazis or communists and Muslims, the KGB. It's amazing the hatred. It doesn't make any sense. What are they gaining by lying to people saying, well, you can't have mineral rights and the like? And you can.
They're
crazy. Anyway, that's what I called to say.
Yeah, you're dealing with the Bar Association, so your attorney, your judge, your everybody involved is going to be part of this association, and they're you know, they've been contracted to be the due process of the government, and so you really have very little chance of accomplishing.
You're nothing. And even if you find some land where they are drilling, this is common knowledge anywhere in Texas, anywhere in Louisiana area too. If they are actually drilling somewhere, actually drilling a hole in the ground. They've been there for 4 or 5 days, and they've got 300 or 400 guys there, and they've got the oil rig set and they're drilling. All of a sudden, they will just leave and go to Louisiana or somewhere else, and somewhere else, just pack up and leave. They tell the guy that owns the land nothing. And it's insane. And the only thing we can kind of, I know several guys who won't even work for a drilling company, and he'll be there, and they'll be going great guns and getting things going, and they'll be told to leave and go somewhere else, and several miles away, and don't even tell them why. They don't give a clue as to why. All they can think is they said he got a better deal through whoever owns the land elsewhere. So screw this idea. Go work over there and make more. Yeah, they got more under the table money coming in. And then that's the craziest thing. And all this information comes from like up north. Now, I'm a diehard Southerner, and I wish I won the Battle of Gettysburg and nothing to do with slavery. But I'm going to tell you seriously, all these, like some of these people, and they have all wealth drilling. They're multimillionaires, my dad's buddies and stuff. They fear arguing with these guys in New York. Mess with these guys, they will ruin. They will screw you, and you just take what they say and behave.
I think what we're dealing with here, Hal, is the concept of a people, one of the people battling the corporation. Now, what happens when a corporation starts doing this stuff is that the corporation is limited liability. The people really can't fight the corporation. I mean, it's a way of passing the responsibility. Why
you know, you mentioned earlier the responsibility of the of taking care and being the maintenance of the land, whereas these corporations, who are deeply, deeply connected with the not only government investments, but the legal system itself, really don't have the responsibility. The responsibility is taken away by incorporating. And so that's why all of these horrible things are happening. When the oil spills spill, it's a corporation. It's not someone that's taking care of the ocean like a person would be doing if he had spilled something.
Right. Well, that's
even more so. Let me tell you this.
That part, the Bar Association is definitely a private forum. So when you're involved with that, you don't have really the situation that you thought. We're not really looking at justice. And there's so much I'm going through my mind to tell people here. But I also have to be careful. I help people defend themselves from everything that we've been talking about. Now, just quickly, the mineral rights can be severed. So you heard that. So the surface estate and a dominant estate can be severed. It can then be conveyed by heir, as an heirship, hereditament, to this caller. But those dealings are private. So whatever they're doing underneath the scenes, it's not that it's unconscionable. That's actionable. But as he found out, there's not many attorneys that are going to fight it. For lots of reasons, I won't want to take any time here. People who just start paying attention to this will know that. And my old thing was that if they're taking your minerals under slant drilling and horizontal thing, that's an action that you would have to go sue for. But that's, again, you asserting your property rights. What happens is people want to skip this monthly allotment, and they are in a weaker position because of it. They don't withhold their lands, and so the corporations just take advantage where they can. That's why they start bouncing around, because maybe there was no agreement that there would be some security, like any rental. When you're going to come and you're going to do this land, you're going to give me whatever. I don't know how much it would be, $100,000. So in case you just bug out, I'm going to be covered for the mess that you made. That's just like setting a bond that the BLM would ask for on an unappropriated land. I want to get to that AOC, ACOE, the Army Corps of Engineers, quickly, because it's been lingering here on this whole discussion also about this eminent domain. Just to show you that they can be dealt with. We had an Army Corps of Engineers come along against a miner here just recently in an onslaught against a miner. And this has been talking about, I better not say it that way. We got agencies from all over coming in to try and defeat this miner. And we're strictly sitting in the mining law. And when the ACOE came after this miner, we came back right at him and hit him right between the eyes. You have to know exactly how to do that. And they came in and tried to declare the land that was granted to the miner. And a patentee can do this also. And they declared that land a wetland. They did it before they had any process, any authority, any compensation paid, anything. So we slammed them right back immediately. Now, you understand that people go down every day because of this certain letter that the Army Corps of Engineers will send. And we said that you did a takings. If you implement what you just said, the fines were $37,000 a day. We said if you try to implement that, we were going to hit you for a takings claim because you declared the land a wetland without the hearing, without due compensation. And and on top of that, you did it to a mineral entryman, and you're an Army officer, you're acting in the capacity of Army officer. You now have come in violation with the National Security and National Defense Act under Title 30 USC 1801 to 1803, and we want to know whether or not you recognize that violation to your oath. That was the letter we sent back. You know, we haven't heard back from them anymore. So there's a way, and I don't know if it's over yet. These people it's an army and an onslaught against private property. They're using all these environmental tools that they have that no one else has figured out how to stop them. And you know what? It's real simple. You just figure out where they violated that basic law. And yet and still, that Fifth Amendment can be used despite its evidence that we can, that the government never wanted us to be free when it was established. That there's evidence that there's still at least that law prevailing that we can use if we know how. When they declared that land a wetland out there in Texas, and Texas has a little bit different implementation of their land law also, and I kind of shy a little bit on the discussion there. But when they came in without a hearing before and declared that a wetland, they violated the grant, the use of that property without a hearing. And I'm suggesting to people that they need to go research the fact that an environmental, a hypothetical or a a perceived environmental harm is not something that can be used as a means for taking your land because it's hypothetical and not known.
Well,
but
now,
they do it all the time, and people don't understand how to stop it.
Do you think that in reality, the true nature of federal lands being declared, say, national forest land, for instance, was to take away the ability of the people to claim that land?
No, not in particular instances. And this is what's being ignored. And I have to tell people that are listening, what's being ignored by the courts right now and the agencies is something called savings clauses. A savings clause, like in a contract clause, there's a savings clause that saves the prior disposals, including the highways and the mineral estates and the agricultural interests. Right in the Forest Reserves Act of it was called the Creative Act of 1891 that disposed of these lands to national forests, and then modified in 1897 where the Forest Service claims authority. There's two provisions right in there that save the prior disposals of the mineral and the agricultural entry. One, for the minerals, it says lands found valuable for minerals are restored to the public domain. And the mining law, it says the public domain that's found, discovered, is the mineral estate. And so we see that there's lands that are found to be minerals or agricultural. Well, let's focus on the mineral. The lands found to be mineral in character are restored to public domain. So you see the veneer, the mechanics of it is, as soon as you find minerals, it's no longer national forest, it's no longer public land, it's now public domain, which by operation of the mining law is vested exclusively in the entryman.
So then you're saying that I could go into Yosemite National Park or Yellowstone and make that claim and use that?
National parks are not forest reserves, so we have to look very carefully. Now, that said, even wilderness areas and other lands, and I even think that I haven't looked very carefully at national parks because they've gone so hard into the UN side. Until I get the basic mining law understood by most people and get the courts back on the track of it and start looking at fully recognizing these savings clauses, I'm not looking at the national parks. But bottom line on all this is that minerals – your society lives or dies by minerals. And at some point, they're going to have to, when you can't find them anywhere else, that national park's going to eventually give way. So right now, that's too big an elephant to chew on. But what we're trying to do is trying to reestablish the memory of the mining law and then get the courts to stop being influenced behind the scenes by the Bar Association itself. And then this agenda that's encroached upon us. And in the government, the federal government recognizes sustainable development as an overarching power that it seems to have in the executive side. And so we have a lot of work to do, but I think with the mining law and the clarity of it and dealing with it as a legislative grant and not a legislation, we're going to have a lot of power if we just get people to come to it.
Well, you know, I think you better start focusing on, I mean, not you per se, but I think we better start focusing on that national forest land because, again, we got to remember that everything is being privatized in this country. It is being handed over to private institutions that are generally organized and created by government funding in the first place. Government is putting the bond money up to create these oil rigs and to create these new Walmart stores and to create all the roads. And all of this stuff is being privatized and then funded by taxpayer and government funds. So it's something that needs to be looked at before those national forest lands are gone to these private corporations, which, again, are, according to government, citizens. So, well, listen, Hal, I sure appreciate you joining me today. Sorry we didn't get to more callers, but thanks, Tuck, for your call. Is there, for anybody that's actually interested in this, are there any central websites? I know that you're not big on the website thing, but is there any central websites that people can go to learn this stuff? And likewise, is there a way, or do you want people to contact you if they have questions, concerns, or need help?
Yeah, I can't get too deep in the help because I'm just overwhelmed. I can give answers. You can send an email to me, markonthebeast@yahoo.com, markonthebeast@yahoo.com, and or you can go over to Oracle Broadcasting and you can look in my archives and you can get my email there. But like I said, I don't give advice. I'll give where to research and how to look through it. I don't have the time to really get too deep, but if anybody wants to go to see what I'm talking about, at least the bulk of my work goes to the Mining Association and the Mining District, which are two different entities, and they have two different purposes, so understand that, but they go to the same website. Just go to jeffersonminingdistrict.com. Jeffersonminingdistrict.com. It's a brand new, about 6 months ago it was created, and it's a very large mining district. We now find out that it's the inspiration for another mining district in Tombstone, Arizona, which is right in the heart of where the Forest Service is trying to take water from Tombstone. They're going to do a mass murder down there. And I think that the fact of this coordination will allow all that to be stopped. People in Washington are thinking about making a mining district now on the same model. And people in Southern California, in other words, the Jefferson Mining District goes halfway through to Oregon all the way down into half of California. And the below part is going to be ticked up. There's some more people thinking about starting one there. So it's spreading. Very nice. And I think it's just people coming to it.
All right, Hal, you're on Oracle Broadcasting Sundays at what time?
2 p.m. Central Time, noon o'clock Pacific, oraclebroadcasting.com, and I do Behind the Woodshed, where you can open your own can of whoop-ass, and I ask you to bring a can opener. If you don't have one, come in, we'll give you one.
All right, Hal, again, you're my favorite person and one of them on this earth. Thanks for joining again. Join me tomorrow for an International Perspective Advisor from TNS Radio in Ireland. This has been The Story Behind the Story with Clint Richardson.
DisclosureNewsOnline.com is a web version of Disclosure News Magazine Monthly. It's an alternative news product from Southern Illinois, now in its 8th year. DisclosureNewsOnline.com details the crime, corruption, and official misconduct rampant in the state of Illinois. For local, state, and national news affecting all of us, presented with a no-nonsense approach, visit DisclosureNewsOnline.com to subscribe and have the full print version of Disclosure News mailed to your home monthly. That's DisclosureNewsOnline.com.
Ronnie McMullen here for Life Change Tea. It's officially the new year, and the new year resolution should be going into effect. In the order of importance, health should be at the top of the list. We invest in how we look, and we invest in what we drive. And so why not invest in who you are and how you feel? Insecurity can manifest from a poor self-image. Life Change Tea is here to help. Cleanse your body. Receive more energy. And start promoting your body to a new you. Physical health promotes mental health. Read the numerous testimonies on our helpful website. Are you ready to change? Are you ready to order? Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or you can call us at 928-308-0408. Here it is again, 928-308-0408. There's no waiting. Call now. It's your life. Give yourself something special. Good health. Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com.
I have bought a few bottles of Heart and Body Extract and have to say that it certainly does work.
That's what Jack from Michigan had to say after his experience with heart pain and what he did to treat it with Heart and Body Extract.
I actually had a huge heart flutter. I was also having some edema around my ankles and very worrisome clot in my right leg that would happen from time to time while I was trying to sleep. Pardon.